Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Co-host today, Chris Schlinger. Thanks for being in the studio.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And today, we get a really great treat. It is the Heath. And what is the Heath? I kind of want to keep it as mysterious, as, you know, enigmatic as it is, but Caesar Hawass and R.L., not Ricky, R.L. King. Thank you both for being here.
It's my stage name.
Happy to be here.
So, a lot of people know Sleep No More. They even know the McKittrick Hotel, you know, over in Chelsea. But they don't know the Heath as widely as they should. After experiencing it myself, I was smitten, blown away, and so intrigued to go back many, many a times. Because it is as performative, as theatrical, as the other things that happen there. And let's just start, kind of, what is the pitch? What is the description of the Heath? Because it is unlike any other dinner I've had in New York.
So the Heath, being the sort of restaurant located at the McKittrick Hotel, is sort of the another layer on the cake of this emporium of curiosities that is the McKittrick Hotel, and just you know, everything from a rooftop bar to a show to a speakeasy lounge. We just sort of got it all, and we just sort of thought the next logical evolution, particularly in sort of exploring sensations and senses, and really taking our time to loop that into the experience that people are already having. We're like, we should throw food into the mix. It's like, food? Why food? Let's do food. Food's because people love food, and people love being in this sort of environment and challenge to explore. And so that's sort of where the Heath came up. And just as a way to sort of introduce people to everything else that's going on in the McKittrick Hotel, the Heath is sort of a starting point, but certainly not the only starting point.
Yeah. And you are special envoy to the McKittrick Hotel. What that means, I don't know.
But I barely know myself.
but what you've parlayed, you know, what you've taken, the cues from Sleep No More, even from the rooftop Gallo Green, to make this a very complete environment. You walk in. I mean, this is from my experience. I don't know if it changes every night.
No spoilers.
Yeah,
no spoilers.
I won't. But you walk in, and the theatrical lighting is—it's kind of murky. It's misty, and it's scented with that same intrigue that you have once you eat the menu as well. But you row by this train card, and you're just transported into this land. And everything from there on out, you know, feels like being in the set of a movie, kind of like The Shining or something that's a throwback to the Roaring Twenties. The menu, though, is a little bit of that, as well as a little bit of contemporary. Talk about, you know, walking into that space or trying out, you know, your initial menu to kind of pair with the Heath.
Well, when we decided the concept that it was going to be that 1930s, 40s old New York with the English, Scottish undertones, it was a challenge. It was a real challenge to try to figure out that wide of a spectrum and how does the food fit in there, and especially for me being a restaurant chef and coming from farm to table and using things that are seasonal, local, and as close to the Heath as possible, meaning regionally local farmers or producers, purveyors. So to come up with the menu was probably at least 6 to 8 weeks of scouring cookbooks, websites, watching Marco Pierre White and Heston Blumenthal and Fergus Henderson, and then also going back to 1930s and 40s train car menus, because that's our setting. That's like our setting is that golden age dining room of a railroad station. So that took fucking forever to try to figure out. Once we figured it out, once we started to bring in that spectrum, then we were able to take those classics and put my style, my spin on the food to make it still mean that it's the Heath, but also have that unique taste, texture, and the way it's written on the menu.
So let's talk about Immersive, which mm-hmm. is the production company that puts on Sleep No More, mm-hmm. And Punch Drunk, you know, which started that whole kind of genre of interactive, performative mm-hmm. plays. How did you see that playing a part in RL's menu? I mean, was it part of service, or was it how the food was presented?
Well, I think the approach to it was that knowing that no matter how you dress it up, a bad menu is a bad menu. And, you know, when people are coming to eat, that the food needs to be really solid, and not only needs to reflect the, you know, personal preferences and aesthetic that, you know, chef has, but also sort of play into the totality of the experience, which I think is a pretty unique approach to creating a menu. Obviously, you know, you hear lots of chefs and lots of restaurateurs say, oh, well, dining is such a theatrical experience. And we had the blessing and the curse of being in having that as very much a very literal directive. You know, it is literally a theatrical experience for us. And so, you know, it was very important that you could come to the Heath and have a full-on dining experience, unmitigated by the theatricality, but also allow yourself to sort of roll with it and let that. But it has to be extremely seamless in the way that everything that happens in the building is seamless, from Sleep No More itself to Gallo Green. You know, if you have any of those edges that are revealed, it sort of pulls a guest right out of it. And so in considering what kind of food we'd have in the space, it was really important to us that Chef was able to fully express his vision, you know, in a very challenging environment. You know, you have to play along, you know, exactly. Otherwise it sticks out like a sore thumb, and yep. You don't want one thing to sort of overpower. They really need to work in tandem. And that was really important from Punch Drunk as a creative engine and Immersive as the developers of the experience. Like it all had to make sense. And that really matters to us.
You had to leave. I had to leave the ego behind. It was like, this is how I cook. This is what I cook. And this is what I'm only going to cook. By leaving it behind and able to adapt and work with first Punch Drunk and then the McKittrick Hotel, to everyone in the building, and actually us working together as a team instead of it being hierarchy, chef driven, this is the only way it's going to be. It was a challenge in the beginning, but after that, figuring out that challenge and adapting to it, it was like the most freeing thing in the mm-hmm. world. You're like, all right, it's not just about me. Yes, I'm a piece of this, but we were able to go crazy and be able to just do all these crazy things with the menus and the events. So it's been quite an experience, life-changing experience for sure.
I mean, you use the word seamless, which I think is super appropriate for, you know, the Heath as a whole. Because mm-hmm. from the instant that you walk in, I mean, even before that, taking the elevator up, mm-hmm. you know, you are, again, in some other place. But once you get to that place, it's not only unforgettable, but you are so on edge is the wrong word. You are just so heightened by everything that's about to happen that you can't have that misstep. You know, the food has to be flawless. The service has to be flawless because everyone thinks that it is a theatrical show and it's not dinner theater.
Mm-hmm. No.
But I remember sitting down at the table. You look around towards every other table thinking like, are they part of this? Do they know what's going on? And obviously there are certain players, you know, some dressed in white, some as servers, some which you wouldn't expect, that interact with you in a way that, one, must drive a chef crazy because you get taken away from the table every once in a while. It's like when smokers used to exist in New York and screw up your timing of, you know, putting out dishes. But there is this, like, crazy amount of ebb and flow that happens in that room. And everyone's cool with it.
It's similar challenges. I mean, we do the same, as it be the smoker or be it the person getting pulled away to have an experience. I mean, now we're training the servers. We've been training everybody on the staff to realize that, okay, slow the food down, speed the food up. They went, you know, there's an experience going on. We need to wait. So it's the same exact kind of style of service, is that everybody has to communicate together. That goes from the front of the house to the performers to the managers to all the people that we have working in the behind the scenes. So it's everything is theatrical there, even the dining, even putting the food up.
Well, we realized very early on, and it was sort of the guiding light, so to speak, that this wouldn't work if the food wasn't great. And it wouldn't work if the sort of experience itself wasn't great. It's all sort of part of one whole that only exists if it's all working together. And there's something really magical about that. And it's very exciting to be a part of that.
Let's talk about this food. Because, I mean, you had to scour 30s, 40s, you know, dining car menus.
A lot of bad food.
Yeah, but... Yeah. How do you take bad food and make it good? How do you make it contemporary but still fit the place that the Heath is?
I think it's because of my training, and I've come, you know, been in this business my whole life from, I hate to sound cliche, but birth, father owning a fried chicken shack, mother being a bartender, but going through all of these motions my whole life and working for badasses down in Charleston, South Carolina, working for badasses in D.C., working next to my peers, my best friends, my family. They're all, like, we all strive to be the best. And then it was reading cookbooks. I mean, my cookbook collection is 300 deep and constantly growing to the point where the wife hates it. But it's all just reading and technique and knowledge and eating and spending all of your money, your whole life, just on everything surrounded by food. And then when we got to this, the Heath, it was looking at old menus and saying, okay, this doesn't sound like this is the way we need to do it, but let's use the technique I know from, say, classic French, Argentinian, or Italian, or whatever I've learned in the past, Vidalia for, you know, super French fine dining, being able to take all of those techniques, smash them into each dish to make it the best possible way to cook it. Go, like, the fish pie. I've had fish pie everywhere, and it is terrible. But the way we do it is classic French with a velouté, and we poach the seafood in the velouté very slowly, and then we cover it with the mashed potatoes that just have egg yolk because they don't brown, they don't break, they just form this nice crust. And then English, everybody that has this dish, they freak out because how did you do that? And all we do is we just take our time.
I love how much attention is taken to a fish pie because, you know, you look at British cuisine and I don't want to be the, you know, millionth person to knock it, but this whole idea of pies, meat pies, etc., doesn't seem like it takes the most technique, but obviously it does. And there was a point where I was sitting at the table and someone came up to me and asked me to come with her. I'm trying not to give too much away.
Easy.
Come with her, and I'm like, hold on a sec, I'm in the middle of eating my meat pie. And she's like, no, you can come with me now. I'm like, I understand, but I'm really into this meat pie right now.
Nice.
So you're going to have to give me a
priorities.
Yeah. So she left a, you know, a little note as to where to meet her. And I know my wife is probably listening. And don't worry, you know, I told you everything about this. But there was so much attention, you know, taken to something as kind of like overlooked as, you know, the classic British, you know, beef and Guinness pie.
It takes us 5 days to make that dish. And when we did it, we did a TV show about a month and a half ago, and we did it in 3 minutes. Let me tell you, that was that was insane. But it takes us from curing the meat for 3 days to making the chicken stock, to reducing the chicken stock, to making the braise, to searing the meat, to braising the meat. I mean, it's all of these things, classic French braise technique, but we turned it into that pie. Made the roux to make the gravy, to make the actual pie filling. And all that came from actually watching YouTubes of Marco Piero White, Heston Blumenthal, even though it's molecular for him, or modernist cuisine. I got a lot of technique on just how to do it right, or how to do it where it's not going to be overcooked or hammered or just taste like shit.
You see HP sauce. You see
we make it.
Bubble and squeak.
Yeah, we made that. That was on the menu when we first started.
So, but you see these very, you know, British things, mm-hmm. But then I was joking with you about Benne seeds, because how does a low country boy get Benne seeds on a menu that's transportive of the 1930s, 40s?
UK loves fish and chips. I love the low country, so we mixed it all together. A mashup. But the Benne seeds gives it that nuttiness that's always missing. And you mix the Benne seed, half the flour, Benne seed flour, with all-purpose flour, and it gives it this crispy, crunchy, but lighter crust than, say, a normal fish batter or a beer batter, where it's always heavy and the fish usually is soggy and hammered, overcooked, because it takes so long to get the actual beer batter to cook. So,
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to figure out how not to reveal too much of the Heath, but still intrigue you enough to go there. You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. We'll be right back.
I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. We support Heritage Radio Network because all you folks listening are so genuine, so dedicated to serious food, so much a part of what this country needs to strive to become. People like you are few and far between, and it's obvious to us at Fairway that we've got to stick together. Our desire is that the word gets out about Heritage Radio Network in its support for serious food, foodstuffs that offer memorability and timelessness, authenticity and rarefied quality. This country grew too fast to have established any degree of a heritage. Europe had centuries to develop one. America has not. Heritage Radio Network serves to hasten the evolution of a society that often appears coarse and uninterested. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Hey, and welcome back to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. We powwowed, we brainstormed for a second. We figured out the question to ask to not give away too much. Chris.
Okay, yeah, actually, while I was biting my tongue about the British food. So let me kind of take the neophyte that, I'm intrigued perspective. So I'm here in restaurant, I'm here in maybe show, I'm here in hotel. How does this tie together? If I show up at this place, what happens? Do I have to go full on? Can I just come to get something to eat? What am I going to get?
Well, I think what we realized, another early revelation was that nothing should rely too heavily on anything else that's happening in the building to be great. And that's what that's sort of our approach to everything that we do in terms of being really dense in our detail and really careful to make sure that it all makes sense together. So you could go to sleep no more, and explore the 100 rooms that we have in the space and just sort of let yourself go, with that. Or you could go to the Mandalay Bar, which is an integral part of the Sleep No More experience, but is also a bar on its own. And then, with Gallo Green, the rooftop bar, also sort of existing on its own as just a really great, place to have a cocktail. And then, with the Heath, it was really important that it could be a companion to Sleep No More, but also could very much stand on its own. Again, we all fail if the restaurant isn't a good restaurant. And so in trying to craft those experiences, you're sort of always thinking of what are the different avenues that someone could take to get here? And sometimes it's, you could have a great meal at the Heath before seeing Sleep No More, or you could have a cocktail before going down into the Heath, or you could see Sleep No More and then afterwards go up and have a nightcap, in the Heath or Gallo Green. And so like Sleep No More, there is no right or wrong way to experience the McKittrick Hotel. And it's very important to always know that there's, we just know that we put ourselves out there and we sort of do the best version of whatever it is that we're doing, and how you experience it, we sort of let the guests take the wheel in that regard. So we would never say this is the right way to do it, or this is how to expect, your night to play out. But just know that there are a gajillion different variations on what your night could look like.
On a Friday and Saturday night, you could spend 12 hours there and have every experience of every hour different. I mean, there aren't a whole lot of rules in this building either. So it's like you really can do whatever you want as long as you're ready to experience that.
You know, I like the fact that you bring that up, because something you said earlier, too, about the classic chef perspective of here's my idea of an experience and here's what I want to create and present for you as a package. Whereas you mentioned that in this, you more has had to let yourself go, be part of the bigger experience of the mm-hmm. whole Sleep No More and the hotel and whatnot. But on a, let's say, a day-to-day basis, to what extent do you think you have a presentation, a package that you present to the guest versus something that you feed off of and evolve even spontaneously? Let's say I would go night after night after night and my experience would be different. Do you think that happens a lot, or do you always have that idea in mind?
I think it happens all the time.
Constantly.
We change the menu every week. There's at least one, two, three dishes in the Heath that change weekly. Gala Green menu changes daily. The weather could change at Gala Green, so you go to the Heath. You could get sick of the Heath and go to the Gala Green. You could come there every day and have a different experience. You could go downstairs to Sleep No More. We have the Mandalay Bar. We have... 100,000 square feet of experience or things to do.
You know, it's really truthful that at a point someone walks up to you, and there was this host. I think his name was John, but you were supposed to call him something else, Bishop. He ended up crooning with the band at a point. And let me point out, there is a live band every night, and it freaking rocks. So if you're just looking to go and see a show, it's kind of amazing. But he said, take a card, write your name on it. We're going to do a raffle. You're going to win something. And I said, okay. So I write it on. He goes like, and this is special. We don't do this every night. And I believed him. You know, when you usually hear that, you're like, that's shtick. But you looked into his eyes and you believed that you were there on a very special night. So I have no doubt that, the permutations happen. That, it is a choose-your-own-adventure kind mm-hmm. of place. You say 100 rooms for Sleep
No
More?
Yeah, 100 rooms. And like Sleep No More, you could come to Sleep No More, three different times, and every time have a totally different experience, even just from where you're standing. Because when you're dealing with an immersive environment, it truly is immersive at the McKittrick Hotel. It's 360 degrees. So even changing the direction that you're looking at or the place that you're standing or sitting at a different table in the restaurant will give you a very different experience just because of, we cover all the bases. It's so dense in detail that there's so much to discover and see no matter, what your perspective is.
And believe you me, my orientation changed to every Aberdonian sour I had, which was a fantastic drink, by the way.
Nice. Either it changed or you just lost your orientation.
Yeah, I think so. There was a little bit of compass there.
We call that the spins.
Yeah.
You'll have that.
Luckily, they lead you back to the table after they take you away.
Drag you back.
Yeah.
Lead you back, whatever.
But, there were certain aspects of the dinner, too, that weren't part of the menu, per se. That, a glass of Madeira or Sherry was offered. How do you interplay that into the menu itself? Do you have to, watch out because things will clash? They won't pair necessarily? Or is everything, again, seamless?
Everything is seamless. Everything was thought about from menu design to the food we're using to the seasonal produce we're using to the meats to the roasts to the small nibbles and crisps. Everything was thought of. The sherry program is one that I really, really wanted to put in because it matched for what we're doing. It fit the dining room. It fit the experience. And sherry just at the end of the meal is just, a lovely thing to finish, cleanse, open the palate again for whatever's next.
With all these, I hear the so many opportunities for inspiration, not only the farm to table, but the whole experience of the Sleep No More and the hotel. To what extent do you get to feed off the guests themselves, pardon the pun?
I think with our team that we have probably 20 different teams throughout the building, and we all work together. So I'm feeding off them that they're hearing from the guests. Or we might do this event that we have coming up in the McKittrick Hotel that it's going to be this a great hedonistic feast that we're going to create food with. Like New Year's Eve was this grand king's feast that was supposed to be so gluttonous. It wasn't about feeding people. It was more about showing your wealth and showing how opulent you could be. So for me, I get my feedback from our teams. They say, well, we're going to do this, or this is what we're hearing, and this is what's coming up next. So with that, then it's just, you just go. Like, you sit with the choreographer or the special events, and they just start saying what the event's going to be, and they're rattling off that it's set in this room and dressed this way, and I just write, 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 and then I go and research it and then create menus off of that.
I mean, you say opulence, and I think, again, that prosperity. And mm-hmm. you think of the Roaring Twenties, and the better half of it was prosperous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people were celebrating, and it was Art Deco, and it was Art Nouveau, and people were there to experience and party. And that's what every square foot of the McKittrick kind of feels like.
We like the party.
Yeah. And you were telling me, though, when you initially cooked a tasting menu to try to get the job, your inspiration was a party.
I already had the job. Yeah. Then I had to do the tasting after the job.
But it was Preservation Jazz Hall Band, New Orleans. And if you've ever been down to that city, I mean, how can't that be a party? Yeah. And how can't that be a different experience every time you go?
Right.
So I think it was like totally perfect.
I think we did 30 dishes for this tasting.
Yeah. There was so much food.
Usually when I do these things, like, I get the idea is like, well, I can't just show you 4 dishes because you're not going to understand my vision or the vision I'm getting from what you guys have told me. So we did 30 dishes, 6 people sitting around, and we carried around the roast to show you what it would be like if we did full roast, what you're getting on a plate. That way you could get a taste, you get a sense of what I feel about the room and the experience and everything else that's going on, so you see how well it fits in with everything else.
So, you know, I'm hearing some pretty incredible stuff, and if I was a chef going into this, I'd be like, whoa, dude, cool job. Sounds interesting. But what's really surprised you now that you're actually doing it?
Well, this, like I said before, this is an experience of a lifetime. Most chefs, they cook their whole life. They figure out the genre they want to cook in, either it be Italian, French, farm to table, whatever it might be. They cook and they decide to work for those people. They decide to work for the best of those people if you're trying to be the best. And once you get to that point to where you've figured out your style, frankly, my mentor told me, he's 20 years, you'll figure out your style. And that was 1999 when he told me that. But then once, then my style was farm to table with a little southern, with southern emphasis on things. But with this, it, you know, it could, it's the experience of any chef, the best experience, because you're not stuck in a genre, you're not stuck cooking one thing, you're not, okay, I've done the genre, now I have to buy the restaurant, now I have to cook behind one stove, now I have to retire from this restaurant or spread these restaurants out because that's all I'm doing. With this, it's English fare. Halloween, we did Morocco, so I was researching Moroccan food and doing that and doing it with technique and style and not just being so fake and, mm-hmm. like, wrong. So for me, for the year and a half I've been there, like I said, in the short period of time, I've cooked so much food from so many different areas that most people will never get that experience in their life.
I mean, let's move upstairs and talk about Gallo Green, the rooftop, mm-hmm. which is just recently opened again and it's, what, 400 people deep sometimes? I mean, that place is rocking.
It's, you know, especially after this winter where, you know, they're literally inventing names to explain the weather patterns that we're suffering through. I had never heard of a polar vortex before. So when we were like, you know, this shouldn't just be, like, a new season of Gallo Green. It should be the answer to all New Yorkers' like hopes and dreams of a beautiful place to escape to, and we really spared no attention to detail there either. I mean, it's this lush, overgrown secret garden that truly feels like an escape. You're in the middle of Chelsea, but it, you know, it really feels like you're in a totally different world. And you know, I think that you know, what better environment to be in to get a little hazy than, you know, this slightly surreal environment anyway. And it just sort of speaks to the seamlessness of everything that we, you know, we do. It has to work in totality, and it has to work from every vantage point. And so Gallo Green this year, we were like, let's really focus on cocktails. And you know, Eric Holloway, who's doing really great things in our bar and created a really beautiful cocktail program that has that's inspired very specifically from the garden itself. So you know, there's cocktails that are actually using herbs that we're growing in the space, and it's very much a garden inspired menu, and it's, you know, not just a slave to trends, but also it's very much informed by what do we like. I mean, I think that a lot of people get really in their heads about what works and what do people want and all that sort of thing. But I think if you just do what you do and you do it really well, you'll ultimately always end up, you know, in a really great place. And that's sort of what the approach is, and letting the experts do their job, letting Chef Ricky make the best possible meal, sort of gently inspired by what we're doing, but let him do his thing, and let, you know, let our entire bar team do their thing and create these really awesome cocktails. And so that's that, you know, that's really what Gallo Green is all about this season. It's really exciting.
I mean, what are the inspirations of the season? What bonkers menu items do you have on?
We just put in an aeroponic garden farm on the east side of the roof, which we have 15 towers that we're growing our own vegetables, tomatoes, cucumbers, fruits, like strawberries. All the herbs that grow on the top of the towers will be used mostly in cocktails. So everything is inspired by first Gallo Green's garden, and then we built the farm to even drive it even more to stay in using in that seasonal, that fresh. The stuff, not farm to table, but roof to table, now that we're coining it, I guess.
Roof to table. Roof, you hear that?
Yeah.
Roof to table. You heard it here first.
Timestamp.
You know, one of my great friends, he started the program. We are one of only two in the state that have the aeroponic garden. The farm is what I like to call it, because garden sounds a little too not farm, not food, not cuisine. But eventually we have even more. Hopefully by the end we'll have 65 towers back there. But that's definitely the inspiration. And it's also, the inspiration is coming from the heath. We're trying to offer you something in Gallo Green that you might see or you might feel in the heath, because we want you to go down and experience the heath for a full dinner, for a full experience down there as well. But as we saw, you know, over the weekend, it's like people are just, they're eating whatever you put on the menu, and we're putting some cool, crazy stuff that mimics, but also a little twist, that little tongue-in-cheek, a little cheeky. You know, foie gras on the menu right now, which I never thought would sell, and we sold almost out on Sunday night, so, which is amazing.
One clause on the menu is that you may experience what an intense psychological interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. I certainly did.
But isn't that life?
We did our job.
Yeah.
Isn't that what life's all about? Yeah. Intense psychological experiences.
It was pretty intense. I mean, in a wonderful way. I walked away, you know, wanting more and wanting to come back many a times. But at the end of that interaction, the person tells me, you're one of the family now. And when you walk out of the heath, you certainly have that sensation. You know, you never, it's Hotel California-y, mm-hmm. that you never feel like you really leave, because, mm-hmm. you know, you're still thinking about it. You're still wanting to be there.
But we're not a brothel.
No. But I just have to commend you, at least, on that is such an accomplishment of just a restaurant, yet alone the McKittrick. That you can create a space and a menu and a full-out experience that is so total and so...
The Heath itself is like the amount of regulars we have just coming to eat dinner. They're not going upstairs to Gallo Green. They're not going to see the show downstairs. They're coming to eat and have that same experience over and over again. We have 7, 10, 12 returns by regulars, which is, for me, being from... mostly restaurants, is amazing. It's like, okay, you've got the experience. You came, you had the great food, you've had the great the jazz band and the performers and all the elements that we provide, but you continue to come back more, I mean, over and over again, which that blows my mind. There's so many restaurants in New York City, 28,000 to be exact, from what the health inspector told me, that you could, you know, there's so many places to eat, but we still get return customers. I mean, it blows my mind again.
Well, I'll tell you, I would certainly go there to eat again, but on top of that, I would go there to experience everything the Heath has to offer. Thank you both for being on.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
RLs, Caesar, and my co-host, Chris. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Hope to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.